This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we explore the relationship between food and style.
I knew from the start that I never wanted to, like, hot glue bread onto my body. Like, I wanted to be able to enjoy it after, and I did.
Food, which is so ephemeral, right, is something that you eat and it disappears. With an image, it remains. It stays alive forever.
Food and fashion align in that they're both lenses through which to look at culture, right? And they're both also tangible things we can use to express ourselves and our identities.
Tune in to Meat in 3, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Guys, what the fuck is going on in New York right now? I mean, you've got, like, a heat wave, and you can't have to-go cocktails to quench that insane thirst on the side.
And we can't figure out who our mayor is going to be either. It's just all... Nobody knows what's going on, is basically...
What the hell?
Yeah, yeah. State of confusion. It kind of happened while we were on the air last week, so we didn't talk about it, but Governor Cuomo decided to pull to-go cocktails. He made the announcement on Wednesday that the following Thursday, the very next day, less than 30 hours of notice, that they were no longer viable, which is the first time during the pandemic that we've done anything on such short notice. The first time we've almost all the moves that have been made in New York regarding hospitality and the pandemic have been initiated on Mondays. That way you kind of had the weekend to clear out the pipes or whatever. So what happened is a lot of bars are kind of stuck with the supplies that they purchased, thinking that to-go cocktails were certainly going to go on throughout the end of the year. I know that I'm personally sitting on thousands of bottles, caps, and customized labels that are now kind of rendered useless. It's bad. It's a bad decision and a bad way to put it into effect with so very little notice for the industry. You know, I think any sector is somewhat like a freight train when it's in motion, and you can't just make a 90-degree turn. There has to be like a curve to correct the course, and to throw this at us with so little notice it borders on cruel, in my opinion.
Well, here's another thing. I mean, like, I know that especially there have been these jokes about, like, burning your masks and stuff, you know, like, it's over. I'm like, it's fucking not over. And I'm wondering if the to-go cocktail thing might come back. I mean, especially with, like, things like Delta variants and whatnot. I mean, that's certainly a possibility, right?
I don't know, man. I mean, that's the thing, is like, there's so many question marks in the future, and like, to pull the rug out from under this. And also, like, let's not lose sight of the fact that it was wildly, wildly popular. You know, I think it was like 80% of New Yorkers were like, yeah, this is a great thing, which now means, by the way, a couple other states did make to-go cocktails permanent during the pandemic, including our favorite punching bag, Iowa, which means in a lot of ways that Des Moines, Iowa now has a more robust cocktail scene, at least in this one department, than the great city of New York. So, Damon, you and I should take a road trip there. Souther, I don't think, is allowed inside the city limits after everything he said about them. But you and I should go and check out their
turn them apart
cocktails
for a decade. They might not like to see me. Yeah, rug pulling is a great way to put it. You know, it was such an unexpected thing. Also, leading up to, again, what turned out to be a beautiful weekend that had some temperatures that were up there. So to-go cocktails would have certainly made an impact. It was also Pride weekend, which certainly would have impacted to-go cocktails. Like, really taking an opportunity for us to take on some revenue away from us without any notice was just, again, I think it's almost cruelty. You know, I think that just because we're thinking that the trauma is over, it's not. You know, we've tread water for this long. We made it to the shore. This doesn't mean that we're insured that we're going to survive. This means that now we need recuperation time. You know, we need to find shelter, get some nourishment. We've been, you know, malnourished over all this treading water time. You know, it's not When you break your leg, that's not the end of the trauma. That's the beginning of the trauma, right? So we're still at the beginning. And to take this away from us so callously, I think is a really big mistake. And doing everything we can to rattle the cage and hopefully get this overturned, at least in New York City. You know, de Blasio has already come forward and said he thinks it was a bad idea. So we've got that on our side in some degree, I guess. I don't know. I'm still obviously quite pissed about the situation.
Right. It wouldn't be New York City if we didn't have something to collectively get upset about, you know, and talk about.
We could get mad about how hot it is, but that's been done.
That's been done. Right. That's been done forever.
I got reached out to by several publications, New York Times and Esquire notably, and a couple of others as well, to give my two cents on this thing. And I pulled up my numbers from the week prior, which dictated that 9.5% of my total sales, not just beverage sales, total sales, food and retail that I do as well, was coming from to-go cocktails. So that number, again, is only hovering around $3,600 a week, but that's because my total sales are also only about 35% of pre-pandemic numbers. But that's a huge chunk that's just been ripped away for no kind of discernible reason. And of course, people came out to support. They had one day to get there, so they came on Thursday. And Thursday, we did just under $11,000 in to-go sales alone. So
wow.
kind of capping up 3 weeks worth of that number. But then it's gone. So, I'm still really hot about it. I mean, how is this affecting Grand Army?
I mean, you know, we saw a lot of to-go cocktails and food. I mean, but we got to realize is that Grand Army is an oyster bar. You don't really take oysters to go. So it's like, we definitely did some things like lobster rolls and, you know, but the to-go cocktail thing was like pretty huge. And we got like a frozen drink machine just for basically for mainly for takeout cocktails. And yeah, I mean, as far as all that goes, I mean, like we've seen a dip, but we also have a lot more seating than Amore Amargo has. I don't know if anyone's noticed that, but I mean, like it's quite a bit more. So,
yeah. I'm actually going to be in at Grand Army later on tonight. So I will patronize your frozen machine and maybe grab some oysters. See if they can box up some oysters to go for me as well.
Yeah. just hang out there. They want to see you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was actually the very first night everything shut down. The place I was working at sent my friend home with, they're like, well, we have all these oysters and all this white wine that's going to go bad. And I remember she showed up at my apartment with just like a ton of oysters and white wine. And we made the mistake of drinking the white wine first and then trying to shuck the oysters. So I woke up on day one of the pandemic with just like gouge marks all over my left hand. And I remember thinking, man, really hope this heals before I have to go back to work. how naive we all were.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, man. But speaking of staying amused during the pandemic, we have another New Yorker here joining us in the studio. We have Lacey Hawkins of Monkey 47 Gin. Lacey, what is up? How are you?
Greg, you just upgraded me to a New Yorker. I mean, I live in New York, but nobody's ever called me a New Yorker. Thank you.
You've been here for quite a while.
I've been here for almost 8 years, but like, I just feel like the second you call yourself a New Yorker, if you weren't born here, people are like, you're a scab. You need to leave. You don't deserve to be here. Like, you got too comfortable. Get out.
Well, see, I feel like, what is the threshold, the threshold that I've always heard is you have to have lived here for 5 years and been mugged at least twice to be an official New Yorker. But there's a unofficial petition circulating that if you stayed in New York for the entirety of the pandemic, like the worst parts of it, you get fast tracked. Like, I think it's like you get like one mugging taken off of your requirements or something like that.
Yeah. I guess I'm like 3 years ahead and one mugging shy of maybe being a New Yorker.
There you go. Do you still feel connected to Portland? Is that what you're saying? Or?
Well, I just feel like, I mean, my wife has been in New York for like 20 years. And when I first met her, I was like, what are you still doing here? Aren't you supposed to like show up, like get your nut and get out, right? You show up, you like somewhere like you find a diamond or you like you're changed forever or you're like you have a terrible time and then you leave. And you're like, that was so great. I'm like, what are you still doing here? So I don't necessarily feel like I'm connected to Portland as much as I just feel like it would be it would be rude of me to claim myself as a New Yorker. Like, New York City would be like, no, no, no. We're going to mess with you now. You think you live here? You think you're from here? Like, oh, you got it coming.
Yeah, New York City constantly reminds you who's in charge. You know,
I mean, what's the old, there's that old saw, right? Live in San Francisco, but leave before it makes you too soft. Live in New York, but leave before it makes you too hard. Right?
I like that.
My personal favorite is that New York City sucks and it's a real shame. It's the greatest place on earth. That's that's sort of how I feel about it.
Souther, if that's what they say about San Francisco and New York, like, what's going on in the Midwest? Because I think that there's some problems out there, right? I mean, Chicago's super great, though, but I mean, the Midwest does have some issues, and you would think that based on that saying, the Midwest would be the place to be, but I don't know, a couple backwards things out there.
I mean, Tennessee Williams famously said, America is New York and New Orleans, and all the rest is Cleveland. that's my bit on the Midwest. Lacey, but you're upstate right now, right? You're living the good life, you said.
I'm living a good week. I'm living the good life for a week. I was able to scoot out of this heat wave. It's still 103 degrees outside right now, but I'm living upstate for this one week where I get to, I was telling everyone that I feel like you've made it as a New Yorker when you can leave New York in the worst parts of the summer. Although I did stay in New York for the entirety of the pandemic, and just prior to the shit hitting the fan in New York City, I was traveling like 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, all over the country with Monkey 47 as the national brand ambassador. And, you know, the years before that, I was working crazy hours, crazy bartending hours, you know, and sleeping for a good chunk of my morning. And I really didn't get to live in New York City. I ate here and I showered here, and I caught airplanes here. And so as the pandemic just completely descended upon New York City and this place became eerie, I know the word ghost town is kind of taboo because it's been tossed around so much, but this place was a fucking ghost town. And
yeah. I think eerie is an apt description. It was as the sun went down each night, the city was creepy as fuck.
Yeah. I got to experience the seasons of New York City like I have never experienced before. So my wife and I would spend most of our day taking long walks all around New York City because it got us out of the house and we felt like it was a safe thing that we could do. Mm-hmm. And I got to see New York City in the spring, and the flowers like saved my life. The flowers that were growing, I just felt like the earth was like, hey, keep going. It's going to be okay. Like, look at this beauty we're throwing out for you. Look at these irises and the tulips and the daffodils and the roses and the hydrangeas and just everything. Look at how beautiful, look how strong we are. And it was amazing. So, and I got to see the summer and the fall and experience winter in New York like I haven't before. So it was really interesting to see New York City in the full seasons.
Well, I'm imagining you sort of have an extra eye for that sort of thing as a beekeeper, apiarist. Is that the correct word? Right?
Yeah.
You're into bees, so you're probably into flowers, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I'm especially into pollinators. So like the bumblebees and the honeybees and the not so much hornets and yellow jackets, though we do need them. But there's also these delightful little bees called mason bees, and they just look like flies, but they make their homes, they create little like clay shelters for themselves, and they hibernate in the winter and they come out in the spring and summer, and they're massive pollinators, but they don't create any honey. And you know, to make a mason bee hive is really simple, and just like a little house on the side of your own house or your apartment or your front yard. And I liked looking for those too, little mason bees.
That's so cool. I'm terrified of bees because I'm highly allergic, but I do have a bee tattoo, and it says bless you because it's a bee sneeze. I worked in gin as well, and one of the greatest classic gin cocktails, really simple, was a bee sneeze. But we also couldn't have the things that we have without them pollinating different plants. So yeah, I think that's really cool.
The bee's knees is my go-to wedding cocktail too. When people, friends or whoever asks me to do some cocktails for their wedding, the bee's knees is always on the menu because it's crushable, easy to make, beautiful. You can throw some different garnish in there, make it, you know, dial it up a bit, and everyone drinks it. Everyone gets drunk on a bee's knees.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a sneaky 2 ounces of gin hiding underneath, like, you know, a very good camouflage screen of some delightful sugar and citrus. So yeah, absolutely. It's like every time I get a bee's knees, like, I love them, but I can't make one for myself or order one at a bar without it disappearing inside of 5 minutes. And I have this moment of like, damn it, who drank my drink? Where did it go?
Lately, I've been making all of my martinis. Well, I should back up and say that when it comes to home bartending, everything goes on ice, okay? Just about everything goes on a big cube. But I feel like I've earned the right to, like, through bartending, through so many years and different levels and trying to make the drinks that you feel like are quote unquote perfect, that now I can like bend and break all those rules at home to yield the same result. And for me, like, everything goes on a big cube, or, you know, I just shake it in a mason jar and take the lid off and drink it. But martinis on ice, especially in the summertime, I just think that I don't know if we should say that it should be trending, because that feels really lame to say, but I just think that people get really particular about what a martini is and what it isn't. There's a lot of rules. It's not very fun. And I think the martinis on ice are really fun. I think martinis, like, we need to bring back fun martinis. You're not drinking them out of a glass that you spill everything. You're not trying to get, like, you know, I don't want a martini that gets me blackout drunk, okay? I don't want it. If I want to get blackout drunk, I will do that myself. I don't need my martini to do it for me. And so I think we need to bring back martinis on ice and just delicious, quaffable, chuggable, drinkable, crushable martinis.
A million percent. I always, one of my go-to drinks in the summer is a 50-50 martini on a big cube with lots of bitters. And when I tell people that, they always look at me like I'm a fucking monster, but I've been banging this drum for years. I'm like, this is the perfect summertime martini. It's a porch martini. It's delicious. And you're right. It'll get you to that nice sweet spot of like, I am just kind of enjoyably marinating in this summer humidity, but I'm not hammered after just 1.5.
Yeah. I mean, 50-50 has always been a great move. Yeah, for me, it's like, I'm on Team Lacey here as well. A lot of times what I'll do is putting it on ice is great because two things. One, as you said, it's just more fun. But two, I do like the kind of ritual of breaking out my spoon and my strainer and my mixing glass and the nice coupe or martini glass. But then at the same time, when I'm finished, all I can do is look at all the dirty dishes and just think about that. Like, I always say that, like, if there are dishes in the sink, you're not ready to drink. And that's like my rule for cooking, but it rhymes if I say drink. And let's be honest, if I'm cooking, I'm drinking. But like making it into a highball is what I've been doing a lot lately. Cause, you know, I mean, like, I like vermouth and seltzer as a drink on its own, but I also like a gin and soda. So like, why not put it all together as a highball? And it's also kind of a sneaky drink too, because when you put a martini in a highball, sometimes it ends up being like maybe 4 ounces of gin instead of two.
You got to fill the glass.
Yeah, it's a taller glass. And
wash line.
You got to get that wash line. Yep.
While we're talking about martinis on ice, which is just like, wow, someone is probably rolling over in their grave or, you know, turning us off because they think that we're not legit, which, joke's on you. There's nothing worse than a warm martini, which is why I'm drinking it over ice. Mm-hmm. Also, let's talk about the garnish. Now, listen, we might start a fight, okay? We might start to argue here, but I know that it's really tacky to just pile on a bunch of little snacks into a martini glass.
But do you know what I love while I'm drinking a martini?
Little snacks.
I love a little snack. And it's so fun to go through my refrigerator and be like, oh, and I would just get like the longest, you know, skewer that I have. A little cornichon and an onion. Oh, here's a radish. I'm going to stick a slice of cucumber in there. You know I'm putting a twist on there, okay? You know I'm trying to put some olives in there. And maybe I'll do a little slice of carrot. And then I get these very slightly boozy but ice cold, delicious little treats to eat while I'm having my martini. And I wonder if we don't do this normally because perhaps it's really obnoxious to serve something like this at a bar, but at home where there are no rules, except for, yes, Damon, you, if there's dishes in the sink, you can't drink. My approach to that also is when I'm at home and I'm making drinks at home, my priorities are comfort, quality, nesting, ease, right? I don't want to do anything that's going to disturb this environment where I'm supposed to be the most relaxed. And so I like a cocktail that takes no dirty dishes. So I don't even break out my mixing glass or my spoon. I literally stir it with a chopstick in the glass. And then I just pile on my little snacks. I mean, I'm on my way. I'm
soup and salad. I call that soup and salad.
I love it. Yeah, I'm all about this. No, you really had me at ice cold because, like, for me, I really love pickles and cocktail onions. And especially you said radishes. I always have radishes around and it makes a great garnish for a lot of different cocktails. But having them ice cold, like right out of the refrigerator, is like, that's how I snack. And so to incorporate that into the cocktail itself just makes complete sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then not only do you not have any dirty dishes, you don't have to go back to the fridge at all. It's just all right there.
Yeah.
You can just park yourself and enjoy. Speaking of enjoying, I'm enjoying this conversation so much, but we should probably take a quick break because we're at the halfway point. We'll be right back to talk with Lacey Hawkins of Monkey 47 Gin and the great city of New York. Talk to you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the virtual studio today, we're talking with Monkey 47 brand ambassador Lacey Hawkins. Lady Hawk, let's talk about bikes. I know you love riding bikes and the perils and dangers of doing that here in New York City.
I do, yeah. I mean, I think that if you have like even an ounce of you know, a drop of competitive blood in you, that, it, you know, riding bikes in New York City, it's just like you're in a video game. Now, I'm not saying that's the safest way to ride bikes in New York City, but it's definitely what I tend to do, of like trying to constantly pass people, or not so much weaving in and out of cars. But I personally believe that to be a safe cyclist in New York City, sometimes you need to take up space in order to be visible to cars. But yeah, I love biking in New York City. And I remember when I first got my bike in New York, which I think I've probably had it for like maybe 6 or 7 years now, I started to see things totally different. You know, the subway is great, but you get in and then you get off somewhere totally different and you miss right. everything in between. Walking is awesome, but it's super slow. And so biking gave me this opportunity to really see the landscape of New York in a totally different way, which is also why I love public buses. I love a public bus because you get to see the city in kind of like slow-mo. And I love to see like the people who get on and get off and the different neighborhoods and it's how you find a good grocery store.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. When I was in New York City, I had 4 bicycles at one point. 2 of them were Fernet Branca bikes, but I got a fixed gear bike because I was at one point I was still in my 20s, and I could do that. But I just recently, yesterday actually, I got my first. This is going to sound stupid, probably to you as such a diehard cyclist, but I just got my first bike shoes and clip pedals. And it's like really, I've only ridden with them a little bit, but it really changed the whole situation. And I realized that, especially during like the pandemic, like I started really biking a lot because living out in San Francisco now and not going up and down subway steps and walking around the city of New York, I was drinking a lot more martinis and mason jars. I was like, I need to do something else to like actually feel healthy. And I mean, it's one thing to ride a bike around the city, but also at the same time you're exercising. So, I mean, there's a lot of great benefits to it. And you don't have to a lot of times, unless, you know, your wheel gets stolen, you can park right in front of the bar.
Yeah.
That's the best part, is being able to park right in front of the bar. Are you actually biking up and down those hills in San Francisco?
Well, out in Marin, yeah. I'm not going like over to Visadero. Like that would be insane.
That's still hard work though, even in Marin. Good
it's
on
hard
you.
To walk those, but yeah.
Yeah. Nice job. What kind of bike did you get? Do you have gears on it? You said it's not a fixed gear, but is it maybe just a single speed?
I gave my fixie away to our sous chef at Grand Army. His bike got stolen and he really needed some transportation, and I was realizing at that time that my knees did not like the fixed gear anymore. So
yeah
now it's like I think it's like a road bike, it's like a touring bike. It's I'll send you a picture of it, but yeah, more gears than I would ever need. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I have two bottles, you know, I forget what they're called, Bidens or something like that, the bicycle bottles, but, you know, one's for water, one's for rosé. And, you know, that's how I roll.
Do you have any baskets on it? Is it like a grandma bike?
No, it's like a, you'll see. It's like a fast bike.
I respect the grandma bike, though. I do too.
Yeah, that was my other bike in New York City. I realized I gave away my fixed gear, and then I had my like 3-speed British bike, you know, kind of old rally style with baskets on it. It was the best bike ever, and wish I still. I don't even know what the hell happened to it. I lost a lot of things in the move.
If I can give a recommendation for a bike shop in New York City, there's this bike shop in Park Slope called Dixon's Cycles.
Oh, yeah.
It's been there for over 50 years. It's black owned, and it's, you know, there's 2 guys and a woman who work in the shop. And it is a really authentic, like, New York City experience where you're not taking your bike there because it's going to be done in the fastest, right? You're not taking it there because it's going to, because it's full of all kinds of different gizmos and gadgets you can buy for your bike. You take it there because your bike will never look better, right? The price cannot be beat. I mean, I swear to God, they just want to do it for free. And your bike will look so good. It'll probably take about 2 weeks, but it's amazing. And I mean, my wife went in there to buy me like a bell for my bike. She picked up this bell. They had one. She was like, "Hey, how much is this?" And he was like, "Oh, that's 10 something." She's like, "Okay." She didn't have any cash. She went to give him the card, and he was like, "Oh, well, just pay me next time." She goes, "Okay, I'll take another. I'll get 2, and I'll go get some cash." You're like, all right, fine. So that's the kind of place it is. I love it. And we always take our bikes there. We know that it's a bit slow, but it's because they're super busy and the quality cannot be beat. I've never seen my bike come back cleaner. I think they take the whole thing apart. They clean everything. They put it all back together. When I took it in last time, I was like, I think I've got some low tires, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I'm not going to change your tires unless they're broken. You know, I mean, right. Whereas I feel like a normal bike shop, they'd be like, you need some new this or new that. I mean, they're going to try to rack up your bill. But so Dixon Cycles in Park Slope is worth the experience. It's great.
I love businesses like that. You know, like just the kind, like very neighborhoody kind of community driven and places that have been around forever. Some like, you know, like there's some old guitar shops in New York City. They're like that, you know, where people are still like chain smoking cigarettes inside. And, you know, like it's kind of like.
I think that's my deli, actually.
Yeah, I was gonna say like the same thing with
like, smoked meats.
Yeah, exactly. But that's—I think that's the thing that I've been missing the most about New York is businesses like that. And yeah, I mean, like that, like you don't go there for a quick turnaround. You go there because it's an awesome shop, and they actually do great work, and they don't try to pull like the mechanic thing on you and like upsell you on a bunch of things that you don't need.
There's also something very New York about having a place that you go to for a service or an item that you know doesn't quite, there's something that doesn't quite make sense about it, but you're like, no, this is where I go or this is what I do, right? It goes against some kind of element of New York City life, which means like, you know, maybe it's not the fastest, maybe it's not the cheapest, maybe it's not the closest, but you're like, no, there's a person there. And that person gives me what I need, which is they complete the service I'm paying for, but also I feel good about it. Like you get some sort of connection with them. And I think, you know, so much of living in New York City is like carving out a piece of it for yourself, carving out something that works for you. And those kinds of interactions with, you know, even a bicycle mechanic, that is adding joy to living in New York City, which can be really hard sometimes. It can be really lonely. It can be really cold. And those moments are just, it makes you feel like you've made it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, in New York, you've got a guy. You got a guy for that. Whatever it is, you've got a guy. And it's great when you can recognize something that is of good quality. And speaking of good quality, I want to hear about how Monkey 47 gin is made. Can we talk about that?
I thought you'd never ask. I mean, we can talk about bikes all day, clearly. Yeah, I mean, Monkey 47 has, you know, we've all seen spirits. We've all seen the landscape of the beverage industry just completely change globally over the last year, nationally, of course. We started out talking about how to-go cocktails got ripped out from underneath us. So there's been so much change. There's been so much up in the air. And I also think that for a lot of spirits, there was a little bit of a test presented to them as the pandemic started, which is like, are people going to buy you from a liquor store, right? Because that for a while in parts of the country, especially New York City, it was really the only way you were maybe enjoying cocktails at home was you had to go to a liquor store and buy it. It's been really cool to see the last year with Monkey 47, this brand and this gin grow and pivot and seeing the numbers when it comes to, oh yeah, people really love this gin. They're going into liquor stores and they're buying it and people are reordering it. And that's so satisfying. You know, I've been to the distillery in Germany's Black Forest about 5 times and every time it blows my mind because I kind of can't believe that they're making gin in this way, which is 100 liter stills. So we only get about 25 liters of distillate from each batch that we make, starting with a neutral sugar beet molasses distillate. Most gins are made using a neutral grain-based distillate. So right out of the gate, kind of starting with something that's a little bit different, yielding a result that we feel is maybe a little bit more superior or perhaps just a little bit off of the beaten path. Using 47 different botanicals, predominantly freshly crushed lingonberries and fresh hand-peeled lemons and grapefruits. So taking that neutral sugar beet molasses distillate, adding all 47 herbs and botanicals, letting that macerate for 36 hours, that delightful pre-infusion that I think of as like a gin soup, you know, or like a cold gin soup, and then putting everything into the 100-liter still, cranking it up, and getting a 25-liter distillate off of the still at about 76-77% alcohol by volume. It literally comes off into like a bucket, like a metal pail. And after that, we actually oxidize Monkey 47 for 100 days in earthenware clay vessels. And if you look at the timeline for producing this gin, it's a bit of an hourglass shape where you've got a 36-hour maceration up front. Distillation takes an hour and a half, so it's very quick, and then 100 days of waiting in the finish. And most people will say, like, do you need 100 days? Like, can't you just, like, you know, put it in a bottle and let it rest in there? And for us, no. So this 100-day period is so important when making Monkey 47. We feel like it's integral in sort of the finishing of this gin, where this is an opportunity for the liquid to soften, to settle, to open up a bit. And then we will add water, which comes from the Black Forest, and bottle it at the 47% alcohol by volume. But this idea of, you know, sort of resting or aging a clear spirit without trying to change the color or the flavor is pretty unheard of. I mean, the most similar I can think of would be when mezcal is sometime aged for several weeks or a couple of months in glass barrels or glass jugs. That's the closest I can come to it. And it, for me, it's really just, it's an opening up process. It's an opportunity for that liquid to kind of settle and soften, maybe not be so hot in certain areas. So it's been pretty cool to work with Monkey over the last year, whereas before the pandemic hit, I mean, I was on the road Monday to Friday. I was all over the U.S. working a lot with sales and working a lot with bartenders and working a lot with bars and restaurants and media and events. And I really had to pull back. And now I get to do a lot of one-on-one educationals or conversations with consumers. And it's so satisfying. I think that there's a tendency in the beverage industry for bartenders to really hold their cards close to their chest, or to be a little coy, or to be a little opinionated, but not necessarily in a good way, right? To hold reservations around what they like or they don't like, and not really share that. And consumers are totally different, where they'll hit me up and be like, "I love your gin. I use it in this and that. It's the best. And I have this people's trying that people." And they're so excited to be able to talk about it. And that's been really, really fun. So yeah, I mean, I'm loving working with Monkey 47, and, you know, can't wait to continue.
It's been really interesting seeing the growth of Monkey 47. Just like you were kind of talking about, like, it has become a lot of people's go-to gin. And I've worked in the gin space and other spirits and advertising before that. And like, I've seen advertisements for it out there, but like, it seems like it's more like organic growth for the brand itself than like a bombardment of ads. You know what I mean? Do you feel that way too? It seems like it's like really like just a natural, like organic, but pretty profound growth for Monkey 47.
Yeah, we're doing some really fun stuff, like, you know, working with Colossal Media or other muralists and you know, companies that do wall murals, to have like our Monkey Jungle print kind of taken over like a huge section of different cities. That's been really cool and really fun to like see some of that come to life. But you're totally on point about how it's maybe like word of mouth that this brand has grown, because that's usually how everyone has tried it. Is, you know, I'll give you an example. I just had this happen to me a couple of months ago. I was doing a cocktail class and kind of Monkey 47 educational with some folks down in Florida. And this woman on the call, she says, you know, she was visiting her friend from North Dakota. She was visiting her friend and she was visiting from North Dakota. And she said, you know who turned me on to Monkey 47 is my farmhand, because his brother came back from a trip to England and brought back a bottle of Monkey 47. And he gave me a taste of it. It blew my mind, but he still has that same bottle. He rations it out for himself. This is a farmhand in North Dakota who found Monkey 47 from his brother who visited England. And I just had to stop her and I said, you know, it's been a minute. It's been several months since I heard a story like this, but I hear this stuff all the time. And when I repeat it, it sounds so silly, or it sounds like I'm, you know, making it up, or like that's what I should be saying because I work as the national brand ambassador. But people come to me with stuff like this all the time. And so, yeah, it is word of mouth, and it is, oh, you don't like gin? You have to try Monkey 47. Oh, you like gin? You have to try Monkey 47. Or people saying, the bottle's so beautiful, I just want to keep it on my back bar. So they've bought a bottle, they've enjoyed it, and then they keep the bottle on their back bars just because they love looking at it. It is a word of mouth and sort of that global cult following throughout with Monkey 47 that people have kind of discovered it. Yeah. Yeah,
and the global thing is a really good point to make too, because, you know, I was going to say that, like, as far as advertising goes, I guess what I really mean when I say that is swag. I haven't seen like a bunch of swag, and I think that's really cool and actually very responsible. But the one piece of swag that I have is something that you gave me when you came to Grand Army and did, like, I think you were on the show, on the radio show before that, and then we went back to Grand Army and made some drinks. We didn't make any martinis on the rocks, but next time we will. But you
I'm
gave me.
I'm pretty sure we made a bee's knees, though.
Absolutely. But you gave me a luggage tag for my suitcase, and I was like, you know what? That is a really thoughtful piece of advertising, and it's actually like an actual leather luggage tag, so it like doesn't fall apart. You know, it's not crap, and like I think about it every time I travel, and my travel drink regime is that I drink gin and tonics on the way out and I drink wine on the way back. So every time I do, it's like I look down at my bag and I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'm having Monkey 47. I mean, that's like proof of advertisement, right? But it's actually like a really classy way of doing it. And I know that like right now PT Uomo is happening in Florence, and a good friend of mine, Matt Rannick, who just came out with the Negroni book, he's been a huge proponent of you guys. I mean, like for Monkey 47 and his Negronis, it's like his whole kind of like lifestyle brand is based around, you know, really amazing clothing and travel and the Negroni. And he always uses Monkey 47. So it's just, it's been placed in really great ways that are, you know, it's not like bombardment. I don't know. I think about these things a lot because, you know, we live in a culture where we get like everything shoved down our throat and we get targeted ads and all these things. So I don't know, I just think, like, to me, that overall vibe of just the presence of Monkey 47 has been very impressive to me. I know that's kind of like a weird sidebar, but
I totally get what you mean with thoughtful pieces of swag, you know, or something useful. And I think that as an industry, we've backed ourselves into a corner where Monkey 47 does create, you know, POS and swag and fun shit, right? But it's really nice.
Yeah.
And it's expensive. And so we can't create enough for everybody. So we create a small run batch, and then it does generate more drive because fewer people have these pieces. And then you have a bit of, you know, envy or, you know, somebody covets what somebody else may have, right? But then there's also sometimes there's just a need for a bar tool, right?
Sure.
Or sometimes there's a need for something like a water bottle with a brand on it. And I'm so annoyed by where we've come, like how we've gotten to that place in our industry, because it's thoughtless, it's useless, and it's just ticking a box that's not doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, the opposite end of that is really nice, thoughtful pieces that are expensive, and nobody can have it all, right?
It's like Supreme.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's, to me, that's cooler because, like, also, you know, one thing that I've been doing recently is like I'm getting away from printed materials, like one sheets and little booklets. I'm like, you know what, man, I have so, like, I used to have so many of those. I just recently started giving them away to like newer bartenders, and like all those little like kind of giveaway booklets you get at like Tales of the Cocktail or BCB or Portland Cocktail Week. And like, it's just like, man, this is just a lot of, I come from the world of design and print, so I know how much paper gets wasted just even setting up the print run on the press,
yeah.
You know? So like, I'm very sensitive to it. So it's, to me, it's all about more useful, longer lasting.
I mean, you think you took those pieces as like a sign of respect for the hard work that was, as a sign of respect for the paper that was left on the you know printing room floor. You're like, I know what it took to make this, and I will take one. Yes, thank you.
Yes, exactly.
I do. Obviously, in the last year, things went from like digital to all and only digital, right? But I find that it's so much more productive, and not in a way that we're doing more work, but productive in the sense that we're able to do work for less amount of time, more efficiently, and go live our life better. For me, that's something I've discovered.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so cool. I mean, it's, you know, again, coming from like the gin world, I've worked with three different gins at this point in my career. And like, I'm just very impressed by it. It's been behind the bar ever since you came in and, you know, did your thing. And I was looking at pictures of us behind the bar and I was like, holy shit. My hair was really long. I mean, it's really long right now, but like, it was crazy long. It like comically long. And that to me just kind of reminded me of how long we've been friends. So
yeah, I don't see you. I always see you with long hair and braids. The cocktail cowboy.
Yeah, and you know that's the thing is like I can't wear a cowboy hat or boots on my road bike. So I had to. I had to get some actual bicycle shoes. But yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about, you know, I've been really longing to get back to New York and see everyone, but this is making me really miss it even more.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'll get back soon.
While we're talking about gin, especially you mentioning that you've worked with three different gins, can we like pull the room and, you know, any brand allegiances aside, spoiler, my news is Monkey 47, but any brand allegiances aside, what's your favorite martini spec and garnish?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of the 50-50, but I like to do like a 50-25-25. So Blanc and dry vermouth.
Yeah. It's
like sometimes, I love Blanc vermouth, but as you said, and this is totally to your point, there's nothing worse than a warm martini. So, I mean, once, like a 50-50 is great with Blanc vermouth, but once it starts warming up even a little bit, it becomes kind of cloying, but I still like that richer texture. So yeah. I split my vermouth with two different white vermouths, a Blanc and a dry. I kind of do the same thing with sweet vermouth too. Like if I'm doing a Martinez, I'll split it with like Carpinot and, you know, Dolan.
So smart. I love that. My go-to martini spec, which has been like this for a few years, 2-1, 2 Monkey 47, 1 Blanc vermouth on a big rock with a grapefruit twist. I can't get enough of it. It's dangerously drinkable. I make it for everyone who says they don't like martinis. And then next thing you know, they've had like two. The notes are like honeydew melon, fresh green grass, watermelon rinds, vanilla, grapefruit. It's just a crushable martini. That's been my go-to for a while now, but I also love a Beefeater or a Plymouth martini too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Greg?
See, I got to go. So this was mine all of last summer. It was a 50-50, 50-50 Carpano Dry and Tanqueray 10 with Yum. Two dashes of Reagan's Orange and one dash of Bitterman's Boston Bittas with a lemon twist on a big ass rock. It's so crushable. In fact, I do. There's a riff on that because we had Johnny from Caravedo Pisco on a little while ago, and I started doing those with Pisco, and that to me is almost so far away from a traditional martini that I was like, I can't call these martinis anymore. So I started calling it a lawnmower man, just because it's like a lawnmower. Like, I'm like, this is a lawnmower martini. Like that's, I was picturing like Don Draper on one of those riding John Deere things. And it's lovely and it's delightful and it beats the heat. I advocate everybody try one.
Souther drinks a Beefeater 50-50 with Dolan Dry, no bitters, as a Gibson. And
I respect that so much. Rule of thumb, if you ever go to a bar and they have a Gibson on the menu, order it immediately. Yeah. Because it means the onions are dope. Otherwise, most of the time, the onions are like questionable. But if it's ever on the menu, you have to get it. But I actually, Monkey 47 made some custom Gibson cocktail onions.
They're so good.
And we made them with Daniel Singer of Filthy Foods down in Miami, which, like, that guy is so great. If any of you have the chance to, like, work with him or order his products, I highly recommend it. His products are fantastic, and he's an amazing human being. So talk about, like, you know, having connections and supporting good people. But we made these custom Monkey 47 cocktail onions that are based on the 47 different botanicals. So, like, heavy in, like, black pepper and sage and coriander. And again, people are like, oh, I don't like onions, or I don't like Gibson's. I'm like, okay, just try one of these. And then next thing I know, they're eating the whole jar. I'm like, I can't keep them in stock. So I sent some of those to Souther. I'm so curious what his take on those are with his, like, you know, chef background and bartending expertise. I would be so curious what his thoughts were. But
I mean, bust them out at the next one of his backyard barbecue extravaganzas.
Yeah.
Yeah. My first, like, I love going to Keen's Steakhouse in New York City. And I started going there for meetings with some different magazine publishers when I started writing stories about cocktails. And I was there meeting up with a friend who's an author and journalist. And he kind of looked at the back bar, and he was like, you know what? He's like, and this was long before Monkey 47 was around, but he's like, I don't know why, but it just seems like the right move to order a Boodle's Jim Gibson here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yep. And so then I just started ordering that every time I go to Keen's. That's what I think, you know, especially having, like, your martini in a certain spec, as you'd mentioned, like, I love a grapefruit twist on a martini for my 50, 25, 25. That's how I do it. But also, like, there's, like, situational and occasional drinking I'm a really big fan of. So, like, I will order a martini in different ways at different places based on, you know, whether it's the food, the atmosphere,
absolutely.
If it's a place that's, like, a little bit more, like, sherry focused, you know, then put some sherry in there, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's the martini, it's so long as we can start getting them on a giant rock and over garnish, that I think we're in a good place.
Damon, I really love your drinking rituals, because this is the third time I've heard you say that when you're in this place, this is what you drink, right? When you're departing, gin tonics on an airplane. When you're coming back, it's wine on the airplane. When you go to Keen's, it's a Boodle's Gibson. And I would be so curious what some of your other drinking rituals would be. We don't have to discuss now, but, like, drop a pin in that for next time I see you.
Yeah.
But it made me think that I have some similar drinking rituals. And one of them is, and I highly recommend it. I highly recommend it. If you're next to a pool, salty dogs. Salty dogs.
Ooh, yeah.
With a lime on the side, poolside. If you don't want to do a salt, that's fine. But there's something about grapefruit and gin with, like, a squeeze of lime when you're next to the pool. And I'm telling you, all of a sudden, life is better.
It's so funny you mention that, because I was in Hawaii for about 10 days earlier this month. And I was drinking salty dogs. And out of nowhere, I hadn't ordered one of those in probably 15 years. And I was just like, you know what sounds really good right now is gin and grapefruit and a little bit of lime and salt. And I also, after drinking, like, way too many Mai Tais, I was like, a great departure, from that whole side of the cocktail spectrum.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. That's so funny. See, this is why we've been friends for so long.
Yeah. And I, funny, I feel like I can count on one hand the number of times we've gone out drinking together. But do you remember the first time I met you? You don't. I do. You don't. I do. Because
did I have too much to drink?
No. It's just that you wouldn't remember, but I definitely do. So it was at Prime Meats, and I think I went to Prime Meats in maybe a small group, and I was with Ivy and Tess, who are identical twins, mm-hmm. right? Ivy Mix, Tess Mix. And or maybe they were sitting at the bar or something. And I met them there, chatting with them. You were working behind the bar, and your twin brother
was at the bar.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember this.
And I believe Prime Meats has like a big mirror either right behind the bar or kind of facing the bar.
Yeah.
However it worked out, it was like this optical illusion and I thought I was losing my fucking mind, okay? Because I didn't know that you had a twin brother. I hadn't met you before. And I keep seeing you working, right? I'm sitting next to Ivy and Tess and I keep seeing another you. And I'm just, it's like this mirror was totally messing with me. I must have just kept looking back and forth. And it's either you or your brother who saw me just kind of like losing it, you know, not really getting what's going on. And you were like, one of you made some comment where it was like, yeah, only twins are allowed here or something like that. Or like, yeah, we came together or something like that. But I was, it was this optical illusion of being in one room with two sets of identical twins and a giant mirror. And alcohol.
I remember that time because that's when Ivy and I came up with the idea to open collectively, the whole group, the two sets of twins, we wanted to open up a twins bar and everything comes as a double.
Love it.
The other things, great. Twins are creepy. So, I mean, he'll never go to that bar, but yeah, that's funny. Yeah, exactly. Twins bar, make it a double. So good. Make a double till you see double. Or not. If you see quadruple, then you're really messed up.
Or there's a really big mirror in the room. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
I was so confused.
I still am. Every day.
How do you think it is to know the two of you? I mean, Jesus. You think it's confusing for you. It's confusing for us. I once worked at a bar where I started and there was a pair of identical twins that worked there. I didn't realize they weren't the same guy for like 2 weeks. Like I worked there for 2 weeks until I finally saw the two of them together and it blew my fucking mind. It was absurd.
Oh man. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. It's crazy for me even. And imagine like also like then us being on stage when we're playing music. That's a whole other show. Speaking of, we're sadly at the end of this one. I know we could go on forever, and we certainly will. We'd love to have you back anytime, Lacey.
We didn't even get to talk about our favorite bicycle accidents in New York City.
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about the show is like we can always have people back, and we certainly have had Lacey on before, and we can't wait to have you on again. It's been a real pleasure having you on and catching up. And I just love having conversations with you because. You know, for me, it's like the show, as we kind of talked about before we went on the air today, to me, it's not just about booze. But, you know, it's like never just about booze to me with any kind of situation. You know, we can talk about spirits and wine and how they relate to really anything throughout history, science, politics, religion, whatever it may be. But it's really about the people and the stories, you know, and like the conversations that really get me excited about it. And I'm always excited to have this conversation with you. So thanks again for being on the show today and check out Monkey 47. If you haven't already, it's arguably one of the best gins out there right now.
Yeah. Turns out it's really good.
And it makes a great 4 ounce martini highball. Mm-hmm. trust me.
Don't
on
just
that
take
one.
Our word for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Have one for yourself.
Exactly.
Guys, thanks for having me on too. Obviously, we can all sit here and talk all day, so we'll just have to do it again.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Monkey 47. Also, check out Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. And click on the beating heart to donate to the station. Keep us going. Until next time, thanks so much and cheers.
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 So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends.
And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.